From the Professional Disc Golf Association, this is PDGA Radio News.
It is officially summer. We hope you are out playing some disc golf, but if you're not, the next best thing you can do is listen to PDGA Radio. I'm Steve Hill, joined by Sarah Lamerson. Sarah, how was your weekend at Ledgestone?
It was very interesting.
Very interesting.
I have lots to talk about.
All right. Well, we will talk about that today on the show. We're also going to be joined by Reed Frescura after his top five showing there at Ledgestone, and we're going to look at the Masters World Championships, which are underway right now at Smuggler's Notch in Vermont. So it should be a nice show. Before we do that, I would like to give a little reminder. On Thursday, we are going to have the Board of Directors Candidate Interview special podcast coming out. If you want to learn more about the candidates for the PDGA Board of Directors, you'll be able to listen to that coming out later this week. So keep an eye out on your favorite podcasting app and over at pdga.com. Elections begin July 1st. So coming up pretty soon. Sarah, we had Ledgestone over the weekend, and surprise, no surprise, Paul Macbeth won on the men's side. Paige Pierce took down the women's side. Paige Pierce and Katrina Allen both really just smashed this weekend.
Oh my gosh.
A lot of fun to watch that. A lot of fun to see when you look at the final scores, like a bunch of women's scores under par. I was super pleased by the venue there for the women at Sunset Hills. I think it's a really, really just a great place for the women's players to be playing. I'm sure you can speak more to that in a little bit. But let's start out real quick. I think actually, Sarah, I think we're going to end up talking a little bit more about FPO this week. So let's talk about MPO a little bit first. Paul Macbeth looked pretty dang unstoppable this weekend. His final score was a 31 under par, 158, and he led the field in park shots, circle one in regulation, circle two in regulation, and birdie percentage, second in fairway hits. And I think he missed like one circle one putt the whole weekend.
That's what I gathered. He just looked so comfortable.
Like, he got like 10 birdies in a row to close the tournament.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's so much blue on the scorecard.
Insane.
He just looked like there was never a shadow of a doubt in any of his shots and his putts, especially.
Yeah. Everything, all of his throws just look really, really clean and accurate right now. And I mean, the stats bear it out. 100% fairway hits in round one. 79 round two, 84 in round three. I think, you know, interestingly enough, like the weather wasn't that great. The weather on Friday, they had some delays there. I'm not sure if he was exactly impacted by them or not. But I know the weather wasn't ideal. It didn't really seem to phase him too much, but just another really strong performance. And like, I don't know, man, he's looking very much lately like that dominant 2015 level Paul Macbeth, which just is awesome and frightening at the same time. I think like I would be scared for the other players. That said, like it wasn't just like a runaway win. Like Macbeth did win by five. You know, I think Ricky Wysocki was trying to kind of give him a run for his money in the final round early, and then Macbeth just kind of put his foot on the gas. Ricky came in second place, Kevin Jones in third, Garrett Gerthy, Reed Frescura in tied for fourth. Another strong showing from Kevin Jones, cementing himself as kind of one of these consistent top five guys. And then I would say the other big story from the weekend, Sarah, is Eagle McMahon having to withdraw at near the tail end of the first round after hurting his shoulder. I guess he had been dealing with some shoulder stuff earlier in the year, which I wasn't aware of.
Yeah.
And it had gotten better, and then it kind of flared up the day before. And he said because of the weather, he didn't get a great, you know, like his normal warm-up shots in, felt it kind of flaring up on him. And I mean, he literally threw a shot lefty at one point during round one, which
it wasn't that bad.
It wasn't that bad. That's the gross part about all of it.
I think that was like the second to last shot. I think it was
hole 15. I think it was like hole 15 or something. And you could tell there were some other shots where he was definitely trying to compensate for it. Like he threw like a little roller one shot that he, you know, just to try something different. He definitely didn't have all of his power there, but I did see an interview that Johnny Disc Golf did with him the next day. He said he was already kind of feeling better. Okay. He could have probably played if he wanted to really power through it, but you know, self-preservation, you got Europe coming up with the, you know, he's got the big swing over there. Especially with the European Open, the major coming up, and then obviously Worlds in August. So probably, Sarah, I would say smart move to pull out at that point. Yeah,
I completely agree. I was actually, so Ellen Widboom and I stayed together in an Airbnb, and we had finished our round by that point. We're watching the men's live coverage because it also their round got delayed. I think
it's like an hour and 15 minutes,
something like that. Yeah. So we were able to watch the whole round, and I was interested in whether he was going to finish that out the round or drop before the round was finished, because throwing lefty for the last few remaining holes may have shot him in the foot ratings wise. So I was like, oh my gosh, if it were me and I wasn't planning on finishing the tournament, like I would pull out immediately when my shoulder started acting up. But I think it shows great maturity on his part.
Oh yeah.
Not to push it, and like you said, with Worlds coming up and some other NTs at the tail end of the year, just more, not, I don't want to say getting greedy, but thinking long term versus a potential win at Ledgestone.
Yeah, and look, I don't think it's getting greedy. Like you said, I think it's being smart. I think Ledgestone right now, it's the middle of the season. You know what the payout is. Obviously, you know what the prestige level is. I'm sure he would have enjoyed getting a little more practice on Lake Eureka before Worlds, but he did say he had a few practice rounds in, obviously, and then he had his, you know, almost the entire round one.
Right.
So I think he'll be okay for Worlds, but that will definitely be something to monitor over the next couple weeks, you know, keeping an eye on his play at his next couple events. I don't think he's playing the Tooney.
Okay.
Is he? But I'll double check while we're looking. I don't think he's playing the Tooney, but I think he might be playing the Estonian Open as well as the European Open. He's definitely doing a few events over that way. So
I think it was really a smart move. I was looking I was semi looking at the YouTube.
Oh, he is playing the Tooney. My bad. Okay. He is playing the Tooney.
I was semi paying attention to the YouTube chat board during that round. Sometimes it's a little little dramatic, but someone was like, Eagle has a broken wing. I was like, oh, that's really sad. But yeah,
I mean, look, like I like Eagle as a person. He's one of the more forthcoming, like mature players on tour, I think, especially like
in his age range.
And then like win or lose, like he's one of the few players who, he has a bad round or he has a meltdown on the course and he will still talk to you about it afterwards. And that goes a long way, I think, toward making some fans and everything like that. And so I'll be honest, like I don't want to see him get hurt. I think the sport is better when you have Eagle McMahon playing and it's, you know, we have a top three instead of just a top two sort of situation. But that said, it did kind of pave the way for another Ricky and Paul battle, which is nice. We hadn't really seen one of those in a while, but, you know, so best wishes to Eagle on a speedy recovery. And real quick, just circling back to Paul Macbeth, Sarah, I don't know how much you got to see him play, but he's throwing this new mold from Discraft already. And then, of course, he went and this is genius marketing by Paul Macbeth and Discraft, by the way. So he had like the Kong, right? It was his like one of his new signature drivers.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you saw, but they actually went and renamed it. They renamed it Zeus because I guess it fits more thematically with like what he's going for with his disc line.
There might be another reason why they renamed it though. Kong.
The dog company?
Yep. My dogs only have Kong toys because it's the only thing they can't destroy.
I don't know though. I don't know if that would be like, that's a brand versus like the actual...
I heard there was some,
I don't know,
there were some issues with naming. I don't know. It was like word on the street. I don't have any confirmation.
I would feel like that's more word on the street, because honestly to me, like if you're looking in like a trademark, like type of situation, the industries are different. A lot of times if you'll have a similar name, but the industries and products and uses are different, you can usually, you're usually going to be okay. Either way though, if whatever the reason was for it, it's genius. Cause now what you're going to have is you're going to have all these people trying to like sell their Kongs or hoard their Kongs before they're gone. And then you're going to have people buying these new ones because people are gobbling up this stuff that Paul is throwing. But I mean, it's pretty wild. And then he's got this new one called the Onyx, even though it's,
oh, I haven't heard of that.
A-N-A-X. He was throwing it a ton. Over the weekend, and that was the kind of the comment I wanted to make, is like he looks like he has so much comfort with these discs already. And it's like, I, you know, a lot of times we'll see players transition to new companies and have a little bit of that transition period, and like his transition period has been so short, it feels like it's just, it's kind of crazy to me to see him performing the way he is.
Going back to the Kong thing real fast. Sorry. Kong makes a dog frisbee. So if Paul Macbeth, you're listening, I would like to see you play around on camera with one of Kong's dog frisbees.
Oh, with that kind of Kong.
Yes.
That'd be pretty good.
I know. We know he listens to the show. I'm just putting
it out there. It'd make for a good cross promotion.
Yeah.
We need more of that kind of stuff.
Exactly.
All right, let's switch over to the FPO side, Sarah. We talked a little bit already. The women's field played over at Sunset Hills. I really enjoy that course, and maybe it's just because I've been playing more on like a golf course style course lately, and so it's fun to see similar shots and similar decision making. But I really just like seeing a course that for the women. And I know the whole argument is, you know, par doesn't matter. It's still the number of shots you throw every round. But for a second, get that noise out of here, because everyone likes to get birdies. And so
that is a fact.
To have a course where the women can be just piling up birdies, and you know, having scores that are closer to the men's scores, I think it's a good thing. For the sport and for the women's division in general. What was your take on playing Sunset? Obviously you had a few cracks at it this week.
I did. I thought it was an extremely appropriate course for the women. We had one par five that, several of the women were taking eagles on, which,
yeah.
You see that a lot on the men's side. You don't necessarily see that a lot on the women's side. So I thought that opportunity was.
How many eagles were there? I know Kat and Paige at least got one. Did anyone else get one besides them?
Not on any of my cards. No. I had birdie second round and squandered my opportunity for birdie the first and third rounds. But, yeah, well, so what I'd like to say about the course as a whole is, not only was it really appropriate for the women, it wasn't just easy birdies. Every birdie was attainable. You just had to work for it.
Right.
There's either out of bounds in the form of ropes, hazards, in the sand traps, water out of bounds, tons of elevation change. Luckily, we didn't have a whole lot of wind on the course. And even though they were calling for terrible weather leading up to the event, we ended up, I don't even think I opened my umbrella one time. I brought it with me rounds 2 and 3 and didn't have to use it. So we ended up with wonderful conditions. Because it's a temporary course, some of the tee pads were a little bit slick from rain the night before and some mud piling up a little bit. So we were able to use the sides or behind the tee pad if we wanted to. But that wasn't a huge, I heard some people complaining about it, but it wasn't a huge issue, I don't think. But yeah, I mean, I don't remember who it was, but someone was like, man, Kat shot course record 11 down on Saturday. That means the course is too easy for the women. And I was like, you know what Paul McGrath shot today? 11 down.
Exactly.
So why can they shoot 11 down and it's insane, and the women shoot 11 down and the course is too easy? It's
all about your frame of reference, you know? And like, I think people have just grown so used to seeing women's scores, you know, closer or over par. But man, I had a blast watching that course. Shout out to, I didn't watch a ton of the live coverage, but I caught a lot of it on the post-production from GK Productions. They did a really admirable job. Sarah Hokum and Madison Walker did the first round commentary together. They were great.
Awesome. I didn't watch.
Sarah Hokum is very good at commentary. Madison Walker's obviously done it in the past, and I thought she really played off of Sarah Hokum really well. I would like to hear them do more commentary together. They made a strong partnership, and like they knew what everyone was throwing. I don't know if Sarah Hokum like just asks people and takes notes, but I mean, she could tell you what like Sarah Gilpin was throwing.
Very
and
cool.
I think she has a mixed bag. So it was really, really well done. I would highly encourage people to go. I know it hasn't been as well publicized, but go find them. They're GK Productions on YouTube, or you can go to the videos section of PDGA.com. We've got the videos linked over there. And, you know, support the women's coverage a little bit, and you can get a good idea of what this course is really throwing out there. Before we get to more your, like, personal experiences, Sarah, man, so Paige averaged 1,002.6 rated golf over the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
It's very good. And the biggest difference I noticed with her was just the putting. And both her and Kat, but we've talked about Kat's playing a lot this year, and we've talked about how Paige's putting has been a little more of a struggle. They both, like, round two, put on a freaking clinic.
Oh, my God.
I don't know how much of that you got to see, but they could not miss. They were draining them.
Well, so I watched, I don't know why, I ended up watching the live coverage of rounds two and three instead of the cut stuff. And, yeah, they were both just on fire. And it was like Paul McBeth this weekend with his putting. It was like they could not miss. And even
Kat hit 67% from circle two and right.
Yeah,
two.
And even putts where so Paul and Pete Ulbari were doing commentary. They were like, "Oh, they're not going for this," and boom, they went forward and made tons of putts.
Well, shoot, that's like even Paige like finished the tournament like that.
Yeah, hole 18. There's not a whole lot of danger on it. There's a little bit of out of bounds, but it really shouldn't come into play. And she had, I want to say, right on circle's edge. But if you miss badly, you're going down a hill. And all she had to do was lay up for the win, and she canned this huge putt. But that's what she does. I feel like she thrives off of energy from the crowd and people watching her. And she puts on a really good show. And she obviously felt her putter was hot all weekend and was like, well, why lay this one up when I can make it?
How many holes would you estimate out of bounds comes into play there? Between all ropes and then obviously, well, and then obviously all of them. Do all of them have like a green and an oak and a sand trap?
Oh no, they're not all sand trap out of bounds. I would say every single hole has out of bounds somewhere. Yeah.
Okay.
So it's like car paths, sand traps, water, or just
work. Okay.
Yeah.
So Paige only had three OB strokes all weekend, which is massive.
That's
for her.
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah. For someone who we have seen traditionally going for a lot of things and sometimes putting it a little bit too far because she may have issues controlling her speed or just gets a little bit too aggressive. Keeping it in the ropes at this course is very admirable. As someone who played the course myself, it's even more astonishing that she was able to do that. I wish I had watched her round live. I can't believe how much energy was probably just beaming off of her that entire round. Both of them.
Yeah.
Second
yeah. Let's talk real quick about Haley King. She is, I obviously, like, we've talked about her a little bit this year, but as far as the up and coming women's players go, like, she is fun to watch.
Yeah. She's got a lot of shots in her bag. She's very comfortable throwing forehand and backhand.
Yes.
She ended up shooting two down, then following that up by seven down, and then two down again. She was on the live coverage her third round, and she had a little bit of a rough start. But she's like built for throwing far. She's just tall and lanky and young and flexible and can just throw a mile. And I actually have not gotten to play a round with her before. I hope to soon, but yeah, she's definitely someone to watch out for.
Yeah, I think we're going to be seeing big things from her in the next few years when she gets a little more experience on tour. All right, one more thing I want to bring up, Sarah, before we get to your experience at Ledgestone. We're going to put on our sports punditry hats here. We're going to, you know, act like we're on ESPN Talking Head show or something. Okay, so we know this was kind of, we know we're having Worlds here in a couple weeks. Gosh, like, is it only like 6 or 7 weeks till Worlds? It's crazy.
Something like that.
So first, let's talk about MPO side. Does this make Paul McBeth the favorite to win Worlds? What do you think?
Okay, you know me, and I'm extremely indecisive.
I asked you this before we even got on the show, so you've had time to prepare.
My answer with normally I can't make a decision about this stuff, but I do like Paul McBeth as our Worlds winner.
I have a hard time disagreeing with you. Like he looks so solid right now, and I don't really have any issues with him going to play in the woods. That's really the toss up right now is what's Northwoods going to do to the mix. But man, I will register it right now as a surprise if we are not talking about Paul McGuth winning Worlds.
Yeah, I would agree. I unfortunately did not get out to Northwoods. I was trying to focus all my time on Sunset Hills this week and was like, I'll tackle North
sure.
the week of Worlds. I was a little bit further away from where we were staying, but I heard that course is pretty treacherous and tons of trees and really tight, and that there's also out of bounds as well. So, but he's proven that he's just can play out of his mind on any course this season.
Yep. Yep. All right. And so then switching over to the other side, does this make Paige Pierce the favorite to win Worlds?
This one is a little bit harder for me, but I would say leading up to this event, we would be talking about Kat being the favorite for Worlds, and I'm still leaning toward that option.
Yeah, I'm with you. I can't really commit to either one of them. I can't say like one of them is going to definitely win it versus the other. I think it's going to be a toss up between the two of them. And I think there's a little bit more of an unknown just because we haven't seen quite the stretches of domination, I feel like. I mean, I take that back. Like, we had a stretch of domination from Katrina earlier this year. So we may be suffering from a little bit of, like, a recency bias here. But I think a lot of it is going to come down to just how we were talking about with Northwoods on MPO. I think Northwoods is going to be a little more significant on the FPO side.
I agree from what I've heard from the course. Yeah. Or heard about the course, rather.
All right. So, Sarah, then let's talk more about give me your recap of the Sarah Lamberson Ledgestone extravaganza. That's what we're going to call it.
Extravaganza. It kind of felt like that. I left here very early Wednesday morning. Do you want to know what I have for breakfast? I'll spare you those details. My intention was to get there around 2 o'clock to practice the course. And of course it was pouring down rain, and lightning, and just was not conducive to me playing disc golf that day, which was very disappointing because I wanted to get 2 practice rounds in on the course, but such is life. So, went back to the Airbnb and Ellen and I binge watched British Bake Off. Because we're all
sure like you do.
What you do in your 30s, you watch baking shows, and it was great. And then Thursday I had to work all day from the Airbnb, but then I got a practice round in, and it was great because it's on a golf course with golf carts, and I felt like I was able to get some more quality shots in because I wasn't worried about it getting dark on us and having to walk through the course quickly. It's a pretty big piece of property. And it was interesting because they were running a flex C tier. And so we ended up playing with these two guys, shout out to Matt and Joe, who were playing on the advanced side, and they were playing the flex C tier. So they had some more experience on the course, and we got some insights from them, which is kind of cool. And then I guess I mostly wanted to talk about this mental thing that's been happening to me. It happened to Jonesboro, it happened again, and now I'm seeing a pattern that's very unfortunate, where I start off the event super well. So I shot two under the first round. I had an awesome card. Ellen and I actually ended up playing together, which is cool. And we both shot two down, I believe. Yeah. And she actually went bogey free. So congratulations to her. That was huge. And then I ended up on chase card the second round, and I was pumped because, you know, as far as
I was too. I texted you like biceps emojis.
Yeah.
I was very excited.
Yes, yes. And I was super excited. I was in a tie for sixth place, in a field of all the best women in the country. You know, I'm just above 900 rated and don't do this full time, and was like, yeah, good job. Like, you deserve to be here. You know what you're doing. And then round two, I ended up shooting two over par, and hole five just really ate my lunch. The second and third rounds, it's not even a tunnel shot. It's like right off the tee. There's two trees and some bushy stuff around it, and you're throwing over one pond onto kind of what looks like an island green, because there's also another pond on the left and then OB on the right. And during my practice round, I tried to overcompensate to the right so that I didn't hyzer out into the pond, and I almost hit the tree on the right. So that was in my head all three rounds. I was like, don't hit the tree on the right. And of course, second round, I hit the tree on the right, go in the first pond, throw again, go in the second pond, and end up taking a six when I had started two down after four holes.
And this is just a par three, right?
It's a par three. It's okay. It's not hard. It's just a mental,
Which hole is it? You said hole five?
Yes. So that is like my arch nemesis hole that I will be thinking about the entire time at Worlds.
The cool. Yeah. Well, you get to get back at it though.
Exactly. So, so that kind of ruined my round a little bit. I got back on the train and I had some unfortunate, OB strokes during the back nine, but Ellen ended up shooting plus one. I shot plus two, and we were like, okay, that wasn't too bad. Like, that wasn't too bad. Well, then we get in and we see that Kat and Paige shot 10 and 11 down, and all these other women shot, you know, like 3 to 7 down. And we're like, wow, okay, well, we didn't do great, but everyone else just shot lights out. And so that pushed me pretty far down. I think I was in a tie for 18th or something at that point. She was tied for 15th. And then the last round, I feel like at these bigger events, I don't start off nervous, especially when I have people on my card that I enjoy playing with and friends on my card, and the vibes are really good and I feel feeling like really hyped up. I'm not nervous at all. It's the third round where I've typically come in and I'm like right on the cash line and I'm thinking about that, and I just start questioning myself before I throw and I start losing confidence. And so that's what happened the third round, and I just could not. I was missing putts when my putter had been on the first two rounds really well, and I just like I couldn't get hyped up, and I don't know what it is. And the same exact thing happened to me at Jonesboro. So I need to figure out a way mentally to stay sharp and stay high energy and
like, yeah,
confident all three rounds and start and finish strong instead of tapering off. So
I wonder,
if you have any advice for me, let me know.
I wonder if you could talk to someone like Jennifer Allen, who's in a similar situation. I mean, I know she's a higher rated player, but she has for years kind of done the full-time work thing.
Yeah.
And goes at the tournaments, and you know, she came in third place this weekend.
That's true.
So maybe she has some tips.
That's a good idea. Yeah, I've talked to Kat about it quite a bit. I think at that point it was right after Jonesboro, and we were talking about more from a stamina standpoint, and muscle memory. And she said something like, it's all about, I think I was asking her about consistency, because at that point I was like, oh, it's a consistency thing, it's not a mental thing. And now I know it's a mental thing. But she was saying, like, I do way more field work than play practice rounds. And she was like, it's more efficient. Like, a practice round could take like 2 hours. Field work you can do in an hour, and you're just throwing the same shot over and over and over again, getting that muscle memory. And I'm not sure, obviously that would help too, but I know this is a mental issue and I just need to figure out how to stay confident with all of my shots from start to finish. So that will
be I think this will be honestly, I bet there are a lot of listeners out there who can relate. So I think it'll be good to kind of, see if listeners have any feedback or just kind of follow what happens with you for the next couple events, even before Worlds.
Yeah.
Do you have other stuff lined up before then?
I had a one-day C tier. I was going to play this weekend, but I was the only FPO signed up. It's not really worth it to me, so I've dropped out of that. But the next would be Music City Open. It's the same kind of format. It's one round a day for 3 days, tee times, on a giant course that my partner, John, designed. So actually, I have the most practice out of anyone on the course because we go out there and throw the non-existent holes that are just being cut now.
Right.
And he knows where everything is. But I think that'll be a really good test of my mental fortitude and hopefully starting strong and finishing strong at that event.
Well, I look forward to seeing how it goes. We'll keep you honest.
Thanks.
Yeah. All right, let's do this. Let's take a break and let's talk with Reed Frescura after his show in Ledgestone. We'll come back and we'll get into some Masters Worlds talk. So we'll be back here in just a moment on PDGA Radio. All right, joining us now on PDGA Radio after coming in fourth place for the second year in a row at Ledgestone is Reed Frescura. Reed, thank you for taking some time today. How you doing, man?
Oh, doing well. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, of course. Before we really get into it, I know this is going to be a ridiculous question, but since we were kind of talking about this off the air, what's the best like mispronunciation of your last name that you get?
Well, I actually had this one person say Frescura, and they were like adamant about it no matter how many times I would correct them. So I don't know. I guess they were just right and I was wrong on my own name, but
it's not even close.
People call you like Fresca or anything like that? I feel like you'd get that one a lot.
You know, I've always wanted that secretly deep down, but I've never actually had anybody call me Fresca.
Oh, it's on now. Like that's going to be your name now whenever we talk about you on this show. I hope you know that.
Oh, thank goodness.
Yeah, man. Have a Fresca. It's perfect. But for real, thank you for joining us. You know, I mean, we don't know you that well, and I'm guessing some of our listeners don't know you quite as well. I know they've seen you on video quite a bit lately. But before we talk about Ledgestone, give us some of your background. Like, what's your disc golf origin story? How'd you get into the sport?
Well, I really didn't know much about it, and my brother had played it when I was like younger because he's like 10 years older than me, so he took me once and I was in middle school and I really didn't know what was going on. I just knew I liked to throw a frisbee and aim at stuff. So yeah, he took me out once and after that I was just pretty much hooked. I was like 12 and after that I would like that whole summer that after he taught me, I would like bike alone to the course every morning and then play around. And then I would actually like go to the place he worked at because he worked at like a boat rental place. And then I would teach people how to like ride jet skis and stuff, you know, just like the intro stuff. But yeah, I mean, I kind of just like fell in love with it right after I started. And then, yeah, as soon as I could drive, I went up to Flip City, which is pretty well known in Michigan, and played my first event with one of my better friends who unfortunately doesn't play anymore. But yeah, I've just been playing ever since then. So yeah. And then when I was in college, I didn't have a vehicle to get to the course or anything. So I would have to either run to the disc golf course or take the bus to get to the disc golf course. So it made it a little bit harder, but yeah, we still found ways around it. I had a guy who actually would drive 45 minutes from his house to like pick me up from the dorm so we could go play at like other places that weren't immediately close to the college.
That's awesome.
So yeah, it was definitely a huge help.
When you were in college, did you foresee yourself going on tour full time? I have a lot of questions around that. I played collegiate disc golf too, and we were stalking your page a little bit and noticed that you also played. What? Give us the rundown on that. What school did you play for? What events did you play, that kind of stuff?
So I played for Western and I'd like ran into his name's Nate Best, and I ran into him at like an event in Michigan and he actually went to Western as well. So he kind of like started the whole team and I kind of like joined on, and Yeah, we had it was kind of strange because normally you think college kids are like, you know, 22 to 18. And the disc golf team we had the first year, I was like 18, and then everybody else on the disc golf team was 28 because they were all in like grad school. So that was like kind of an experience. And then it was even funnier because Eastern Michigan had a team, and I think the average age of the Eastern Michigan team that year was like 35.
It was
ridiculous.
All PhD students.
Yeah, like pretty much just like a bunch of old guys playing collegiate disc golf. So
old guys.
Yeah.
Ouch.
But yeah, so I mean, we played against like Ferris. Ferris is, I mean, they've got a great program, and they were always like the people to beat in Michigan. So we were always like scrambling to get people that were good enough so we could actually take on Ferris. But yeah, I mean, collegiate was a lot of fun.
What was your home course? Like, what do you consider it up there?
I started playing at this tiny course called Winstrom Preserve, but since nobody knows where that is, I like to say Shore Acres. And that's in Saugatuck, Michigan, which, I mean, I guess the only cool place about that is it's close to the beach, and it's the only place in Michigan where you can find cactus in the summer. So it's like really
That's interesting.
Peculiar, yeah.
Nice.
So when you were in college, did you play any other sports, or was it just disc golf all the time?
Well, I started playing rugby, and I went to like a few practices, and then it was like I'd played rugby in high school, and then I went to college and played rugby, and I don't know what it was with Kalamazoo, but it's super swampy there, so we ended up having to play on like this muddy field every practice, and like it was just like miserable. Like you'd just be covered from head to toe and like just caked in layers of mud, and I'm like, you know, I think I'd rather go out and play disc golf versus like lay in the mud and wrestle with a bunch of dudes. So yeah.
There's the pull quote. That's the pull quote we're using to advertise this interview this week. I love it.
Yeah.
I mean, is there anything about rugby that translates to disc golf?
The short shorts, I would say. And that's probably about it. Yeah.
No mental strategy that equates at all?
Not really. In rugby, it's really team-oriented. So, I mean, all your strength is, like, in the team mindset. So, I mean, it's kind of like a transition between, I mean, like a sport where you play, like, solo versus, like, a team sport. So, I mean, in terms of, like, mental, there's not really, like, I don't know, any comparison, I would say.
All right. So this is the real hard hitting question that I have to ask. You know, you're one of the, I guess I shouldn't say one of the few, but there aren't quite that many lefties out on tour. And being a lefty myself, I always have to root for you guys. Mm. But I mean, like, you know, being out on tour and everything this year a little more, and especially at a place like Ledgestone, like, are there any advantages or even disadvantages for you as a lefty? Like, do you feel like your game has to be a little different?
You need to have a forehand if you're a lefty, for sure. I learned that very quickly when I started playing open. I mean, it's nice to have like a good turnover shot, but obviously the forehand is preferred.
I was going to say that bridge hole this weekend, you couldn't have played that bridge hole without a forehand.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Especially cause they moved it farther left this year. Cause like last year it was like, okay, well, if I can pump a forehand out there and if worst case it turns over, it'll still land in bounds. But with this hole, it was like, you gotta just chuck it up out there on like a high, you know, flat to hyzer and just hope it comes all the way over. And think the last round, thank God they had that OB rope on the outside of the wall, because my shot was like, I would say 10 centimeters in bounds, still outside the wall. Thank God. But
oh, were you one of the ones? You were one of the ones that was outside the wall but in bounds. I heard about that.
Yup. Yeah.
That was a little goofy this tournament.
Yeah, but I mean, otherwise, I guess being a lefty, it's just kind of tougher because you don't get to follow the shots, you know. Whereas like if you have righties on your card, it's like, all right, you see the line, and then that's, you know, usually the line you're going to take roughly. Whereas like for the lefty, it's kind of like, well, here goes nothing. I hope this is what I want.
Dude, trust me, there's plenty of times where I'm sitting there like watching guys throw and I'm like, oh, that's doing the, oh wait, no, like it's going to go the opposite way. Cause I just, yeah, my brain, my brain calculates to lefty throw. Are you like, are you normally a lefty in everything?
Yeah, pretty much everything except for opening doors and doing combination locks. The only two things I do with my right hand.
Interesting. I don't even know what hand I use to open doors or combination locks.
Combination locks. I'm definitely a righty.
That's very specific. Interesting.
Just the way you have to rotate it. I don't know. It's just easier, I guess, biomechanically.
Huh.
Nice, man. So, Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
Going back to, sorry, I just pummeled you with questions a few minutes ago. When you were in college, were you trying to go on tour full time? Did you have other plans? Like, what did you major in? Like, what was your life path at that point?
And how'd you get to touring?
Yeah.
I majored in exercise science, and I knew I wanted to do something along the lines of personal training or like cardiac rehab, where you know, rehabilitating patients who had just had heart surgery. And I don't know, I was just like always in the back of my head, I always just wanted to like take a year off after I graduated college and just play disc golf and see where I can go with it, because it's been like a deep love of mine for so long. So I mean, yeah, it's just, I guess it was something I really always wanted to do. And when I was like really young, as silly as it sounds, I wanted to be like a professional athlete, you know? So I guess in some way it's kind of like the dream for me right now, just to be able to do this while I, you know, still can. So yeah, I guess in the back of my mind, it was always there.
So did you graduate? I noticed the past few years you've played a ton of events, but you didn't play a whole lot of NTs or things out of like a, you know, your region specifically. So is this your first full-time year on tour?
Yes, I would say it. Every year before this, after 2016, it's more of just been like segments of going on the road and coming back home. So this year is definitely like the first year where I've been able to play most of the larger events. And I'm super thankful for that. And I'm super thankful because I have, you know, one of the best tour partners in the world, Andrew Marweed. Very accommodating, very laid back. And yeah, he made the tour a lot nicer being there.
That's awesome.
What's your guys' travel situation been like this year? Are you just popping in a car? Do you have the RV situation?
Oh,
what are you doing?
I got a story for you. So we were looking for a vehicle last year towards the end of the year, and Andy's aunt, who's from California, had one of those like a Philo type vehicle.
Like the van. The van.
Yeah, like the kitchenette and like the, you know, the shower and stuff, but it still looks like a conversion van, just like a larger style of it. And so his aunt sold him that, and that was like probably 2 weeks. That was probably like around the wintertime open when Andy traveled out there. So he picked up the van and we were going to meet in Vegas. And from there we were going to do like the, you know, the Texas loop and then the West Coast loop and then head back to Michigan. Well, so I'm hanging out at the hotel with one of my boys from Michigan, and Andy is yet to arrive at the hotel in Vegas. And Andy gets to the hotel finally, and he's like, all right, well, nice to see you guys. I'm going to run to the airport quick and pick up my buddies who are flying in from Kalamazoo to caddy for me. And I'm like, all right, yeah, cool. You know, you'll do that. Come back. We'll go play a practice round. Well, he calls me at the airport and he's like, well, I might be a little late. I kind of had some issues with the van. And I'm like, oh, all right. Yeah, no problem. Like, just come back whenever. We'll play around, you know, before it gets dark. And then he calls me like 20 minutes later and he's like, yeah, I can't really drive the van anymore. I'm like, what do you mean? And so he's never actually driven a van where it's been taller than 7 feet. And at airports, they've got those clearance bars.
Oh, no.
Well, he basically turned our conversion van into a convertible that was essentially undrivable. So, So we had this super sweet van, but we never actually got to use it. It was great in theory, I guess. But after that, Andy had to fly back to Michigan after Memorial and pick up his Equinox, and we just took that through Texas. But I mean, we had a great situation starting out, you know, great thought processes and preparation, and yeah, it just didn't quite work out as planned. But
you guys, that's like what happened to Paige and Grady a little bit with Paige Bierkus's van. I believe they lost part of the top of theirs earlier this year too.
A valet parking guy actually did it though.
Oh, well, yeah. See, that's like, I feel like you could probably feel a little bit better about that if somebody else did it, the van, but
after yeah. quite a few warnings too, they're like, you know, our van has this amount of clearance and he still did it. So
oh, that's brutal.
Yeah.
All right. So let's talk Ledgestone a little bit more. You've performed really well there the last couple years, a lot of time on the lead card, fourth place both times. What do you think like lends to your success at that tournament? It's one of the biggest of the year and you just seem really comfortable there.
I mean, the biggest thing about Ledgestone, and I guess what you see the most, is just all those tight OB ropes. So ideally, if you can just stay in bounds and get birdies, you're going to be fine. So, I guess it was easier this year because last year I had like worked out what I'm going to do on each hole. So it kind of like takes down the mental preparation for this year. But yeah, just all you have to do is stay in bounds and take birdies when you can.
Did you feel like you had, so you ended up on the lead card first and second round, and you haven't been in that position a whole lot, I don't think, to this point. Did that kind of give you some mental pressure? How did you feel about the large crowds, the cameras, all that kind of stuff?
Well, first shot on the tee, I'm always nervous, but after that, it kind of just dies down because, I mean, the whole idea is to like put on a show for the crowd, and nobody wants to see some guy just shanking shots and going OB and all this misfortune. So I guess with that in the back of my mind, I just like to keep to my plan and stuff. But it kind of made it tough for my caddy with all the crowds because she's a little bit shorter and doesn't walk quite as quickly as I do. So, I mean, it was kind of just like a waiting game for whenever my caddy would like get to me to like be there for me because, yeah, there's a lot of tall people in those crowds, but... And the crowds just, I don't know, the crowds love to walk so fast and just follow on the coattails of the lead card. And I'm not the fastest player, so I'm like in the middle of the crowd. And I'm sure like those guys at some point were wondering where I was at even. But
well, I mean, you basically have to chase Ricky anywhere you go
yeah.
on lead card. So I feel like you got to kind of, he's like on his own, like he's at extra warp speed. Versus everybody else.
Yeah, if you want to keep up with him, you almost need one of those running speed suits.
Yeah.
That's like the polyester ones or something.
That are like rollerblades or something, yeah. I mean, so you talk about kind of putting on a show for people and everything, and like I kind of appreciate that. Like, what do you top out at? Like, what do you feel like you top out at distance-wise, power-wise? Because I noticed there were a couple shots that I was like, oh, Reed's throwing this big, I can't remember which hole it is exactly, but there is one shot for sure that you looked like you were going super huge on. I don't think it worked out quite as well, but I just can't remember which hole it is. It might be 8. One of the ones through a gap. Mm-hmm. I don't know. But I mean, how do you feel like you rate up with, you know, the distance throwers and everything like that?
I mean, I don't throw as far as the farthest throwers do, but I throw far enough to the point where I can have, I guess, a very slight, I don't even know if I would say slight advantage, but I can throw far enough to the point where the second shot's comfortable and I don't feel like I have to really push too much further. So I guess if you can tone down what you would throw at like 100% to like 80 or 70% and still get like a moderate outcome, I guess it'll make more of your shot stay in bounds. But I mean, yeah, I definitely don't throw the furthest by any means, but I guess I throw far enough for a lefty. So.
There we go.
Walk us through your decision-making on hole 17. I didn't get to see you throw the skip shot off the water the first round, and judging by the Yule Bar's commentary the second round, it didn't seem like you did it that day either, but I definitely saw you do it the third round. Was that always in your game plan? Like, is that the safest shot on that hole? And can you explain the hole a little bit for people who might not have seen it?
So hole 17 is essentially a green that's kind of like a, I would say the green's probably like 40 feet wide from like the OB, both OBs, including the pond OB and the sidewalk OB behind it. And it's slightly downhill. So if you throw a shot into the water, it's going to skip. The skip won't be as tall as like an air shot skip would be if it hit the green, which I guess in theory would give it a better chance to stay on the green once it hits the water, if you know everything else is right. But I guess my thought process for that hole would be, check the wind. If the wind looks good, I'll think about it. Flip a coin. If it's heads, it's that much greater of a chance. And then if I throw the disc at the right angle and it actually happens to hit the water, then it works out. But second round, I don't know. I kind of like, I guess from last year, I kind of threw it into the pond a lot sooner than I wanted to. So this year, I kind of focused on just getting it closer to that green. So it's probably within 30 feet in the water from hitting the green, like to get the skip on that. But I mean, just one of those things you got to feel out. So one of my buddies came up to me after round two, after me not doing the skip shot. And he's like, "Hey, just so you know, you lost half of your fan base because you didn't do the skip shot."
Well, you gained them back plus more third round. Everyone was just like on the cover.
What are you throwing there?
Yeah.
Basically just an overstable fairway driver. So right now Discraft has their Raptor that's out.
Okay.
And that's perfect for it. Cause I mean, you just want something to come in on, you know, just a very slight hyzer. So it gets that skip no matter what.
Have you lost any discs practicing that shot before the event?
No, because every shot, I mean, I throw that shot pretty hard, so there's no way it's going to ever be short. So worst case, it just, all the shots will just skip too far out of bounds.
Like, it's about a 300-foot carry over the water, right?
Yeah, about.
Where is there anywhere else on tour you can employ that shot, or that you have employed that shot?
Last year at MVP, there's I forget what hole it is. It's the first pond hole.
Okay.
And no, it's not the first pond hole. It's like it's like 8 or 9, I think. And there's like a wall before the, right at the end of the pond, and then the green's right there.
Right.
And so I think a lot of righties throw like mid-range turnovers, I want to say. And I'd thrown like a Raptor type disc. I think back then it was like an Ati, I think, from West Side. But yeah, so I throw this disc and I ended up like shanking it short. And it ended up skipping off the water and like parking the hole accidentally. So I guess that was the only other time I employed the skip shot, but that was a total mistake. So
I want to see it more. I want to see more, more water skip shots in disc golf. So, I mean, what's your outlook for the rest of the season? You know, tour plans, goals, how do you feel about the rest of 2019?
I guess my tour plans, just to play all the big events and place well at them. One of my big goals is, as always, to make the DGPT championship at the end of the year, because that's always a pleasure to go to, because I don't know, there's nothing like Florida and there's nothing like playing New World. So that was a goal that's always, you know, in mind. So it's kind of like a little bit of like a good motivator to play good at the DGPT events. But I mean, ideally I just want to finish like top 10 and I just keep those good rated rounds up, you know, try to raise that rating. Yeah.
What is your outlook for Worlds? How are you feeling about it?
Oh, I'm feeling pretty good about it. I haven't played Northwoods in a few years since they dropped it at the Ledgestone, but I don't know. I really enjoyed that course when they did have it. And yeah, I mean, Lake Eureka is manageable. Northwoods is very manageable. I have high hopes for it. I just got to stick to that game plan and yeah, just perform and execute.
I forgot to ask you, what's it like kind of being a disc golf meme?
Oh.
With the CSI Miami thing from last year. I know, I was listening to the Jomez commentary this year. They were hoping you were going to drop it on him again.
Yeah. That was different.
Were you ever even a CSI Miami fan?
I've never watched CSI Miami.
That's the best part of this.
I had to look it up. I was like, oh, okay, that's what it is. But yeah,
so maybe not quite as exciting being a meme if you don't know what the context is.
No, but you know, I guess like it's the thought that counts. So I appreciate like the effort they put into it, and they did a very good job on it, I thought, because everybody like loves it. So yeah, one of my friends wanted to like get T-shirts made with like the CSI Miami thing on there. I was like, I don't know, that's like a little excessive, but
I'd support it.
Yeah.
You should make your caddy wear it too.
Yes, I love it.
That'd be good. All right, Reed, before we let you go, what we like to do with first-timers on PDGA Radio is hit them with the lightning round. So I'm just going to throw quick questions at you, and I want you to give me the first answer that pops in your head.
Like a one-word answer or like a short sentence?
Either way, whatever's easiest.
Okay.
Some of them will be one word. Some of them will be one course, for example, stuff like that.
Okay.
All right. So first up, we have favorite course on tour.
Oh, God. Maple Hill.
All right. And then most difficult course on tour.
Whichever course we played for Texas States, I would say.
Oh, okay. The golf course one, Spring Valley or whatever it was?
Yeah, that one was wicked tough for some reason.
Okay. All right. This is a new one that Sarah hasn't heard yet. I tossed this one in with AJ last time. Most overrated course on tour.
Most overrated course. De La Viega, hands down. It's like, okay, no, sorry. We're doing the lightning round. I don't want to go.
That's okay. No, feel free to elaborate. That's fine.
Okay. Well, so I've always heard about De La Viega and the Masters Cup. And I'm like, this place is going to be sweet. Like, I can't wait to play here. I've seen all the footage. Like, I can't wait. And then I get there and like, I don't know if like I was watching the footage with a biased, excited perspective or something, but it was just like being back in Michigan at these Michigan courses where you just have trees everywhere and there's like a decent line to hit, but it's like good luck hitting that line. I don't know. I just, yeah, that course, there's something about it.
Ate you up a little bit?
It destroyed my heart and soul, but yeah.
All right. Best food on tour?
Little Caesars. You got to go with the butter parm.
No thought.
If you don't get the butter parm, don't even bother going.
Wow.
I feel like that's one that people spend a lot of time thinking about, and you're just like Little Caesars.
You don't have to. Like with me and Andy on tour, you can expect at least 7 Little Caesars boxes at the Airbnb like by the end of the week. At least.
I mean, it's
7.
Cheap too, man.
Yeah.
All right. Favorite sport to either watch or play besides disc golf?
Ice hockey.
Okay.
That's a blast.
If you could pick any superpower, what would it be?
Ooh, ability to fly, I would say.
There we go. All right. If you weren't a professional disc golfer, what do you think you'd be doing? We kind of asked you that earlier, but we'll give you a real chance at it.
I'd probably be working at like a Foot Locker or something somewhere, but no, actually I'd probably be doing cardiac rehab or I was thinking, what is it called? It's like an athletic trainer. I'd probably be doing that.
Sure, sure, sure.
Yeah. Little okay. Caesar's delivery.
The dream job.
Does Little Caesars even have delivery? I think they might only be takeout.
Oh, I have no idea. I don't think I've ever had it before.
Yeah.
Oh, it's like $5. Right. You got to get the crazy bread. It's all about the crazy bread.
I know where to go next time I'm at an event with you guys, though, if I want my
there
Little
you go.
Caesars picks.
That's right.
All right. Pick one person, living or dead, that you would want to have dinner with.
I would say Nikola Tesla, but I'm not sure. Yeah, that's a really good question.
That's a good one.
Alive or dead? I'd probably say Plato. I feel like he'd have a lot of good stuff to say.
I like it, man. You're much. This may be one of the more thoughtful interviews we've had. All right, you're trapped on a desert island, and you can only watch one movie for the rest of your life. What's it going to be?
Happy Gilmore all day.
We just went from Plato to Happy Gilmore in one question. I love it.
Yeah.
All right, man. Last one. Cats or dogs?
Dogs.
Dogs. All right. Well, Reed, thanks so much for coming on the show, man. It was a pleasure.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
No worries. And good luck on the rest of the road. What's your next big one coming up? Are you hitting D-Glow and all that good stuff?
Yeah, we got the D-Glow in 2 weeks. This weekend is CCR in Lansing. Paul Macbeth will be there, so it's going to be a lot of other big names, too, so we'll see how that goes.
All right, man. Well, hey, good luck.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, that was Reed Frescura, and this is PDGA Radio. We'll be back in just a moment. All right, thank you again to Reed having a Fresca. We're making that thing.
I was going to make a joke about how it's his own personal flavor of Fresca or something. I don't know.
I don't know. I'm not sure. I don't know what the flavors of Fresca are, but I'll do some research on it. And hey, if he wants to have that be his nickname, it's on. We're going to, every time we talk about him on the show, it's going to happen. So
I'm into it.
All right, Sarah, we had some hot rounds from over the weekend, and I'm actually a little surprised. They all came from Ledgestone. Usually when we have these big weekend events, we have at least a couple different tournaments mixed in.
Yeah. I mean, in all honesty, they were just some really, really hot rounds at Ledgestone. I don't know what else to say. Like, everyone was just shooting super well, except for me. Hey, I still cashed, though. I'm proud of that.
Still cashed.
All right. So the fifth hottest round was Jennifer Allen, and she shot a 972, her final round, and that kept her in solo third for the event. So congratulations to Jennifer Allen. The fourth hottest round was a 979, and both Missy Gannon and Haley King shot that. That was their second round. Haley King finished in fourth. Missy tied for fifth with Lisa Fagus.
And we're going to have to get Missy on the show soon. She's been playing well lately.
Yeah, she's good people too. Her husband travels with her and caddies for her. His name is Tom, and he's super nice.
Nice.
So, yeah, they're good people.
Missy Gannon, not Cannon, right?
Correct. Although I think she does have a disc with her on it, and it's like her arm looks like a cannon, so I could see where the mistake might be.
It's good marketing.
Yeah. Anyway, back to hot rounds. Lisa Fagus had the third hottest rated round. She shot a 982 her third round, and she ended up in that tie for fifth with Missy. The next round was a 1019, and that was Katrina Allen shooting the course record, scorching 11 down 49. Her second round, and of course she finished in second as well. And then we've got Paige Pierce, just one above that at a 1020, her third round, finishing in first place.
Crazy. Pretty good. So yeah, good stuff. All the men's hot rounds go round three, round two, round one. Kind of cool. So the fifth hottest rated round came from Mr. Anthony Barella. He shot a 1069 rated third round, and that helped him move up into 39th place at the tournament. That he must have been struggling a bit before that. After that, we had Paul Ohman with a 1082 rated final round. That moved him into a tie for 42nd. Kevin Jones is 1091 in round two. Put him in third place, and I was wrong. Actually, it didn't go 3-2-1. My bad, because Paul McBeth's first round, 1094, was actually the second hottest.
Way to ruin it, Paul.
And then Ricky Wysocki, 1098, second round, was the hottest round of the weekend. He came in second place. I feel like we haven't talked about Ricky enough from over the weekend. And it's just, again, like, it's kind of been like this kind of hit or miss season for, I don't want to say hit or miss, like just not quite as like consistent as I think we would expect. And so I think kind of what we've been getting out of Ricky since he switched sponsors is kind of what I expected out of everybody who switched sponsors. And, you know, you've started to see it kind of coming around now. Kevin Jones, another one who switched sponsors, third place, you know, Paul just seems like he's been outperforming the sponsor switchers. So it's going to be interesting to see how the rest of the season shakes out. But we've got to move on from the MPO, FPO scoring to talk about the Masters division, because we have a world championship going on this week, Sarah. We have the Pro Masters World Championships taking place at beautiful Smuggler's Notch in Jeffersonville, Vermont. It is a PDGA major, and there are going to be quite a few titles handed out, a lot of divisions going on. Sarah, what do we need to know about Masters Worlds this week? It's already actually happening.
It is, yes. So they played their first rounds today.
It was bad weather.
I saw and heard on one of the, what is that hole? It's one of the holes on Fox Run where the basket is just totally exposed to all the weather. And there was a putt that was kind of lofty and just got totally thrown from the basket in the opposite direction that the person intended. It's that kind of wind today.
Yeah.
Not cool.
Which is kind of odd. I don't think we were expecting anything like this up in Vermont this time of year, but
well, I was looking at the weather and I think, I talked to Big Dog Andrew Sweeten today, and he said it was like 59 and raining. And then I looked at the weather for the rest of the days, and it's supposed to be high 80s.
Yeah, it's supposed to, hopefully this storm that they're having is going to blow out.
Yeah, hopefully it'll turn around. As far as the courses go, they are playing Fox Run and Brewster Ridge. I am pretty familiar with those because we played Worlds there last year. And there's actually three different layouts for each course to suit all of the different divisions that we have this year at Masters Worlds. For Brewster Ridge, the three layouts go from 4,600 square feet. Oh my gosh, I can't stop saying that. 4,600 feet to 7,900 feet, par 61 for everybody. And on Fox Run, which is the longer, wide open course with lots of out of bounds and tons of elevation change, the footage goes from 6,000 to 9,300.
That's a lot.
Yeah, that's a par 63. So we've already got some leaders on the board. Right now, is this going to be... All right, spoiler alert.
Spoiler. There's no spoiler alerts.
All right, I just want to be sensitive to all y'all out there. All right, Dave Fellberg, cover your ears if you don't want to hear this. Dave Fellberg is leading by one in the Pro Masters 40 Plus division. He's two down, one over Ray Johnson, and then there's a three-way tie for third. Lots of guys on the list that we know: Steve Rico, Barry Schultz, Ken Tyberski, Johnny McRae, so on. Pretty big field. And then on the women's side, we're tied up for first place at plus 23. I don't know how to say her last name. Say it for me.
Natalie Holokoy?
Holokoy.
She's from Switzerland.
Yes. So she and Courtney McCoy from Georgia are tied up, followed by Elaine King and Susan Stevens, who are one back from that. It's pretty tight at the top there as well.
Yeah, that's good. I like to see that. I like seeing some close scores, but it's a long week. For sure.
Mm-hmm.
The five rounds before the finals it's pretty good. It's a pretty good run. I think, five rounds and then a final nine. That's more than you young people have to play at Worlds,
Sarah.
That's more
than we get. I know.
Gosh.
A little jealous. But yeah, there's a really good showing this year. There's 163 players. We've even got a couple guys in Pro Masters 80 plus. That's super cool. Life goals.
I know, right? Wow. That is great.
Yeah.
And then the nice part is too, you know, there's, if you want to follow it, we've got live scoring going on at Old Reliable PDJ Live this week. We don't have quite the same stats as UDisc or anything, but we'll still have, you can keep track of what some of the players are doing. Central Coast Disc Golf is going to cover the final nines for each division. They may cover a little bit more. I'm not 100% on that one, but they're definitely covering the final nines from, I'm sorry, I said each division. I meant just MP40 and FP40. And then Smuggler's Notch is like in-house YouTube channel. Smugs TV is going to be capturing some footage this week as well. So those will be the places you can figure out. I know we've had a couple people hitting us up on Twitter asking questions about that. So thank you for your interest there. Obviously, there'll be round recaps. Marty Gregoire is out there. He'll be writing those up. And it's, you know, always good to get an event back at Smuggler's Notch. Probably one of the most coveted kind of venues now in disc golf.
I wouldn't mind playing Worlds there every other year. It's just a beautiful place. When I was there, so when I travel for disc golf, I'm not necessarily on vacation because I'm usually kind of stressed out and under a lot of like physical and mental anxiety sometimes, but when I was there, I just felt like I was on vacation. It was beautiful.
That makes one of us.
Sorry. I had some downtime. I don't think you had any.
I think the only downtime I had was when we went to Fall Fest for like an hour.
Yeah.
That was about the downtime. But no, it's a beautiful venue. The staff there is awesome. The resorts, it's beautiful. So we're pretty fortunate to have that place on the disc golf radar as much as it is. Sarah, I don't know then if we should do picks this week since technically we're late and the event has already started.
Up to you.
I don't think we should.
I'm always ready for a gamble.
I feel like it might give me too much of an advantage because I get to go Well, wait, no, you get to go first, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, we're not doing picks this week. No, it's fine. We'll save our picks. We should have obviously done them before, so that was our bad. But it should be fun to see the coverage come out of that. I mean, I'm genuinely curious to see how Steve Rico ends up doing. I would say, like, going into this, I would put him as one of the favorites. Just for him being his first time in Masters. It's always interesting to see what your first time Masters players do, you know?
Absolutely. And these two courses are so opposite. They couldn't be more different from one another. So you're really, it's not like a person who's going to throw far is going to necessarily win, because Brewster Ridge has tons of woods to level the playing field. And then Fox Run is all about distance plus accuracy, reading the wind, elevation change, all that kind of fun stuff. So it'll be interesting to see who lands on top this week.
Yeah, Fox Run is no joke.
No, it is not.
It's a long, I mean, there's a few of those wooded holes, like in a little early run, and then like 16, 17 down the stretch, but, or no, 16, 17, 15, 16. I don't remember the exact numbers, but the rest, it's like, you gotta get your arm on.
Yeah.
So
I miss those courses.
Well, you go back and play the Green Mountain Championship later this year.
Oh yeah, I could.
Save up that paid time off.
Yeah.
So, all right, Sarah, any plugs for the rest of the week before we depart?
Not so much a plug, but more of a thank you. I have 8 discs left that I'm trying to sell to raise money for junior girls that are going to the Junior Worlds, which is the next world championships coming up in Emporia, Kansas, the second week of July, I want to say. And my goal was to give $1,200 across the 3 winners, and then a little extra spending money for those who submitted applications. And I'm so close to my goal. I just saw UDisc's Matt Kruger. Just bought a couple Mako 3s, so I appreciate that.
Very nice.
Just more of a thank you to everyone who has supported this cause. And it gives me a chance to get all of my dog's cute faces out there in the world, all over the country. All over the country, not the world, yet. That'll be next year.
Oh, you haven't sent any international ones yet?
No, I'd have to charge a little bit more for shipping, but maybe next year.
That's a good point. Well, cool. That's awesome. Pumped to see that you're able to help out some people with Junior Worlds. Junior Worlds coming up pretty soon, a couple more weeks.
Yep.
Should be fun. All right. Well, I think that is going to do it for our show this week. Once again, thank you for listening. And if you have feedback, leave us a review, put in a couple stars for us, if you wouldn't mind.
Or five.
That's fine. Either way, we'll take it. We'll take a little, it's kind of like if you're keeping stats for yourself on UDisc and you want to, you're like, sure, it was circle 2. It was close enough. Maybe it was on the edge, but we'll take that 5-star.
Yeah.
If it's really 4. But anyway, or hit us up with feedback, radio@pdga.com. We always like to hear from listeners. I think we need some like listener success stories, Sarah. So if you are listening, if you made it to this point in the show and you're still listening, send us your recent tournament success stories, and maybe we'll read some on the air in the next couple episodes.
Great,
I think we need some more listener love. So until next time, that was Sarah Lamerson. I'm Steve Hill. This was PDJ Radio. Be good to each other, and we will talk to you next week.